brother John.
Good morning, Jerry.
So, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, doing pretty good. I've got a little bit of a sore throat, but it's going to work out fine because I'm just doing like any good baseball announcer would, drinking some tea with a little honey and lemon, and I'm ready to go.
Well, ironic you should bring up baseball announcers, one of our major topics today.
Yes. But before we get into that, why don't we, I got a shout out to one of our listeners. Last week we talked, our podcast had to do with cancer treatment and cure. And I think one of the things we emphasized is the fact that, don't hang your hat on any specific number, such as, you know, a 5-year survival rate, etc. Got an interesting feedback from one of our listeners who, due to medical reasons, will remain anonymous, about an experience that his sister had. We talked about a drug that is being pitched by Bristol Myers called Opdivo, which I kind of would call, to summarize, the kind of the lung cancer treatment. It's an immunotherapy drug of last resort. And we talked about the fact that this drug will usually used when after a person's got advanced cancer, lung cancer, they've metastasized and it's gone to you know, other places, and they've used chemotherapy. Well, sure enough, this listener brought to my attention that his sister had a comparable situation where lung cancer, now lung cancer going to brain cancer, did the chemotherapy. After a couple, you know, several months, didn't work. She's come back. She's taken Opdivo, and now she's lived. She's extended for at least six months or more. So the bottom line is here, Opdivo, we were talking about results that averaged 3 months. And here we have a person who's in a pretty tight spot, who's doing very well, actually is considered to be in remission as much as you can be under those circumstances.
Right.
So
right.
I just think it emphasizes the point we were making, that don't get too hung up on numbers. It's the individual, their approach, emotional, physical, whatever, that can make a big difference on how these treatments work.
For real. For real.
Yes, for real.
So, good news, good one. Any other shout-outs you got, or any other follow-ups?
That's about it. I just want everybody to know that I did my laundry last night, which means I've got my Bro Show T-shirt on.
As do I.
So we had to make sure, you know, want to make sure we have that on comfortably fitting and ready to go.
Yeah, we got to walk our talk here a little bit. And those T-shirts, we're in a campaign right now, and you got until Mother's Day, y'all. So go get them. We got plenty of T-shirts left. We're trying to sell some, so get on over there. This is a new one. It's blue, and it's got some super duper cool neon type colors on the blue, and it looks good. It looks good. Very brotherly, the Bro Show.
Yes.
Okay, John. Start us out here a little bit with the sports.
Sports. Well, you know, we talk about sports, film, entertainment, and politics are fake news. So what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about sports kind of a little off the beaten track. I've been really interested in a new TV series that came out on IFC called Brockmire. Brockmire started in April of 2017 with eight episodes. And it's actually been so successful with those episodes. And right now, Wednesday, it finished up its seventh episode. It's got one more coming up this upcoming Wednesday, and then it'll be renewed for, it's been renewed for next year. So it's been very successful. This is not what you call your normal sports TV show. And actually, it's not very normal when it comes to sports announcers, but it's really good. To give you a little background on the main character in the TV series, Jim Brockmire. He was basically considered one of the young, upcoming voices of baseball, and had really done an incredible job at the young age of 25, you know, being a broad, you know, Major League Baseball announcer. And for some reason, he felt a need one day to go back to his apartment or his house to get his very special pen that he uses for scorekeeping while he does his announcing. And sure enough, what does he do? He discovers that his wife is having an affair. And an affair might be an understatement. Apparently, she'd had a long history. of infidelity that he finds out about. Well, it results in him kind of having a breakdown on the air. And as a result, he ends up, you know, just going mad and nuts on the air, losing his job.
Did he ever? That's good. That's classic, that scene.
Yeah. I mean, it was mind-boggling the way that he conducted himself. And this is all setting up the show itself, because what happens is that 5 years, 10 years later, he ends up at the bottom of the baseball heap broadcasting for an independent team in Pennsylvania called the Morristown Frackers. Now, Morristown is your typical, you know, Rust Belt town that's seen better days, and you can see that even the fans who are at the ballpark have had seen better days, too. So so that kind of sets up the tone. And what the series does is it basically it goes through some of the episodes and events that take place as he tries to recover his career as an announcer. So just to give you an idea of the people that are involved, there are three main characters in. And Brockmire stars Hank Azaria, which we will talk a little bit later about his background, which is incredible as the baseball announcer. And Amanda Peet plays the minor league club owner. And she's not only the owner of the club, but she's Brockmire, Jim's love interest. And then we have the intern who's trying to keep Brockmire under control, played by Terrell Jackson Williams. And this intern knows nothing about baseball, but he's social media savvy. So he's more interested in the hits that he gets off YouTube that Brockmire gets based upon his rants than anything else.
Yes.
So the thing is that this Brockmire is just off the wall character.
He even tries to play catch with the kid, and he can't catch a ball.
Oh, he can't catch a ball.
It's pitiful.
It is really sad. And so you got really three main characters here. And I'll talk a little bit what I've learned about the behind the scenes, the way that they conduct themselves. But the show, you know, the thing that makes the show work real well is that, you know, Brockmire, he plays an announcer, and he plays kind of an old school announcer that throughout the thing vacillates between being like a drug infused alcoholic and kind of a semi-sweet, sentimental guy, kind of goes back and forth. He is kind of keeping everything in his radio voice, so he's always on.
Yep.
And Amanda Peet, you can see, really relishes this role. And this, by the way, is an indie production. I mean, these guys are just hanging and having fun. This isn't what you call your big production that's going to be take, you know, weeks to do. In fact, I got some insight as to how that kind of worked. She plays this fun-loving owner who happens to take more than a liking to Jim. She ends up, you know, being his main squeeze.
Right.
So the baseball deprived media intern is, you know, trying to learn baseball while Jim keeps him he's keeping Jim abreast of how many times he's, you know, been on YouTube or how many hits he's had. But the show is more about the man than baseball. So if you're looking for a lot of like on-field action, this is not going to be your program. Very little is even shown in the ballpark, and Jim is just trying to get on with his life, but doing it within the confines of his baseball mentality. I mean, it seems like there's so many baseball metaphors that are thrown around in this thing that he uses for real life. So, you know, that's his way. That's his comfort zone. So when things get rough emotionally, there he is, just, you know, winging out. It might be, it could be, it is, whatever he wants to say, as little Harry Carey used to say.
Yeah.
So
it's
really, really funny.
Oh, it's great. I love the jargon he throws around too. You know, it's like inside baseball, literally. You know, like Mary Jane goes, "Well, he keeps talking about chin music. What's chin music?" I said, "Well, that's when they throw it real close to the batter's chin, trying to intimidate him." She goes, "Oh, that's really cool." So we might get Mary Jane interested in baseball a little bit here.
Well, you know, you don't have to have a lot of interest in baseball. In fact, like I'm going to talk a little bit about a couple of the scenes to give you an idea how it works. But the voice that he uses is the old-fashioned baseball announcer. And Hank Azaria has got a reputation of, you know, the man of many voices that we'll talk about later.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, it's unreal, the things he can do. So what he's done is he's taken kind of a composite thing between Mets announcers and Bob Uecker is part of it. He's probably the best known. You sense a little bit of the Harry Carey, Bob Uecker. There's a guy in Chicago here that broadcasts on the radio called Pat Hughes. That's kind of the way And it's more, they're more interested. And in addition to that, having sort of a little Southern twang to the way he talks, which kind of is, you know, what, and if you're from New York, which Hank is, you know, bringing back the memories of Mel Allen for the Yankees and Red Barber, who was a Brooklyn Dodger announcer. So he's more into resonance of his voice than content. I would think of him as sort of a Ted Baxter announcing a ball game with a lot more knowledge.
That's it.
Is the way you kind of look at it. So the show, rather than being on the field, has got a lot of edgy stuff off the field. And I'll give you a little spoiler alert. This is one of my favorites, and I'll just briefly state. Jim is having this, you know, this, his love interest is the club owner played by Amanda. And Amanda brings forth the fact that she is pregnant. So Jim, you know, is trying to sort through this with Amanda. And they finally, Amanda, he says, it's in your court. It's your decision to make. You're controlling this ball game.
So he uses all kinds of metaphors without saying what he's supposed to say, right?
Yeah. So the thing is that she finally comes to the conclusion that she is going to have the abortion, and they go to the doctor, and I guess it's early enough. And believe me, I'm not an expert in this area. Hopefully, I'm stating it correctly. He gives Amanda a couple of pills to take.
The morning after pill.
And morning after pill. So what happens is that she takes the one pill. And Jim is rocking. He's celebrating. He's kind of happy that everything's working out right.
But just an aside. Just an aside. These two irritate the hell out of that doctor.
Oh, that.
Yeah, he really hates them. He thinks they're disgusting.
They're disgusting. He's somewhere between. He's kind of confused and angry. It's kind of hard to say. He kind of goes back and forth. The doctor does.
Oh yeah.
So Jim's celebrating. So all of a sudden. And by the way, there's a thing I failed to mention. Amanda Peet is having an incredibly hard time swallowing the first pill. It takes her forever.
Oh.
So.
Gags.
The second pill. So what happens is that they're in their bedroom, and Amanda is away from the scene. And all of a sudden, Jim sees this white stuff with like a line on the doggone table.
On a mirror. Little mirror, yeah.
Yeah. And so all of a sudden he says, wow, this is time to celebrate. So he ends up sniffing that, and Amanda comes in and says, well, you know, I can't swallow that well. That's my crunched up abortion pill, my morning after pill.
Oh, I love that. That was so cool.
Oh, yeah.
And he does them both, of course. He does both lines. He snorts them both. Pig. Yeah. Very funny. Oh, man.
Then
he freaks out, of course.
Yeah, so another trip back to the doctor for another pill.
And of course, he never wants to see them again. Well, they had to go all the way up to Pittsburgh to do it, because all the local stuff, the threat to you might get hurt. They throw diapers full of rocks at people who try to go into the clinic.
Yeah, it was...
Yeah, oh, there's some great stuff. There's some great stuff in this show.
So the fact is that the show deals with Jim Brockmeyer with his comeback. But what's interesting about it is that, is, you know, back in 2010 this all started, the Brockmeyer character.
Legend.
The legendary Jim Brockmeyer goes back to an episode of Funny or Die, where the meltdown is part of a one of their shows called Legend in the Booth.
Mm.
So this is where the background, the series has been kind of set up with this by this Funny or and Die episode. And since 2010, there's been many efforts to try to get this thing rolling. And it was actually tried to make it into a movie. And it's really nice to see that it's getting on the air, and it's been so successful. As we segue into Hank, Hank Azaria, the person and the entertainer, just want to point out that Hank, what makes I like about Hank is the fact that I've run into him. I listen to a lot of baseball. I get it. I, you know, there's 30 different teams, and I have my favorite announcers, and so I subscribe to a service where I can listen to any ball game I want to. In fact, if I could probably listen to back in the old days for Montreal Expos, I could have listened to in French if I wanted to. But
wow.
The point being here that Hank is I've heard Hank do some promo on ESPN games, baseball games, and I've also heard him do some promo with the Mets announcers. And the fact is that Hank, when he comes on, they'll let him do some play-by-play in the Brockmeyer style with this plenty of his ad-libs are there. And when he goes on and they want to when they're promoting the show, Hank will complain about the fact that they're not giving enough information about the game. Like, let's stick with the game. You can interview me in between. So he's really got this die-hard interest in baseball. He's from Queens, and he makes a point about the fact that you're born a Mets fan, you don't become one. And so I really respect the fact that we've got a guy doing this thing who's got a credible interest in baseball, plus an immense talent with respect to voice. So that's an unbeatable, unique combination. So as we finish up this segment, I just want to mention that when you look back at the history of doing something like this, we need to comment about an announcer, Bob Uecker, which we mentioned earlier. Bob Uecker sort of took this in reverse. Bob was a baseball player, a catcher, and really not that good a catcher. He was always a backup catcher, who realized very early that he needed to have another career. And so he's a baseball announcer who basically honed his craft by doing play-by-play in the bullpen to entertain the bullpen pitchers.
Right.
And he would do imitations of Harry Carey because he was an announcer. He was a ball player with both the Milwaukee Braves and also with the St. Louis Cardinals. And the heyday of the Cardinals are in the 60s when, you know, I was when they won the World Championship, Bob was their backup catcher.
Right.
So he went the opposite way. But here's a man who went from player to broadcaster to movies to TV, because where his heyday in the movies was Major League, playing Harry Doyle, the announcer,
yep,
doing just an out over the edge version of himself, which was incredibly good. And then he later did a TV series, I forget the name of it, but he did it. And so he then did that. Now Bob is back what he does the best, and that is announcing play by play day in and day out for the Milwaukee Brewers. So I just want to kind of mention that Bob is a character in himself. I mean,
when we
on Johnny Carson, he was so self-deprecating in terms of the way he approached it. It's like when they were talking about Bob, somebody commented to Bob during the 1964 World Series, says, "Well, Bob, we noticed that you didn't get into the World Series. You didn't get a chance to play." And he says, "Well, yeah, I mean, the Cardinals wanted to win." So that is just like Bob can do that for a whole segment with Johnny Carson and just have everybody rolling the aisles.
Oh, his repartee was incredible. Very, very well known for that.
Yes. So
he has a lot of friends. A lot of people hang out with Bob because it's fun.
You know, the other thing I want to comment is, you know, here we got this show about baseball announcers. And the fact is, it's harder to become a Major League Baseball announcer than it is a Major League player. Think about this.
Wow. Sure. Numbers.
We've got 30 teams with 25 men on their roster. That's 750 jobs, which we know there's a lot of turnover. We're talking about probably an average of 5 announcers between TV and radio for each team times 30. That's 150. And guess what? The turnover isn't that great. I mean, the extreme example, that would be Vin Scully, the announcer for the Brooklyn/LA Dodgers, whose career spanned over 65 years. Jeez, that'd be like 60.
That's a big number.
It's a large number, and there's plenty of them out there like that who you know, and just one more aside, and that is that I listen to a lot of minor league games. I've met minor league announcers. And a lot of them are incredibly good, but there's just no place for them in the major leagues to display their talent. One day I'm in the broadcasting booth area, and one of the announcers says, "Oh, you see this guy over here? He's announcing. He's actually He's actually done, he did 2 weeks with the Oakland A's when the announcer was sick. He's actually made it. So that's how they
made
were
it to the bigs.
Anybody who's who made it in the bigs, even in a very small way. So
wow.
That I
sad.
Just recommend
sad, really.
That, yeah. I would say that the Brockmire reruns, now that the whole series is about over with, it will be pretty plentiful on IFC. And, of course, we've got that last episode will be coming up on Wednesday. But I recommend it. It's a fun time, a little edgy, but a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, so, yeah, this great vulgarity and stuff in it. And it's so spontaneous. John, are they heavily scripted, or they do a lot of ad-libs?
Well, I'll tell you, they're pretty scripted. It's pretty loose. But one of the things I noticed when I hear people talk about it, there was this episode episode 7 that was on Wednesday, had a bunch of announcers in it, including Joe Buck. So and
who he hates? Who he
fun.
Hates?
He hates Joe Buck. He figures that Joe pulled some pranks on him that upset him.
Unforgivable. Yeah.
Unforgivable stuff. But the thing about it was that when I heard people, the announcers talk about it, they talked about the fact that, look, we would do, typically you would do something with a big production where you might take a week to do an episode. Here, they're doing this episode, a part of the episode, a banquet scene. They said, we did that like in less than an hour. And when one of the guys screwed up his lines, Tim Kirchner and actually Hank Azaria as Jim Brockmire just ran with it, man. And he was supposed to say, Yentl, the movie.
Yentl, yeah.
And instead he said lentil, the beans. So
right.
Sure enough, Brockmire goes off on beans and starts talking about beans. And sure enough, they leave it in. Who cares?
Yeah,
and so it's pretty loose. And the other thing is that the announcers commented about the fact that how much Hank and Amanda Peet made them feel so comfortable. This was fun. This was not work.
Yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit about Hank and what he's done. And you can tell that this is fun for him. This isn't what you call his biggest payday by any stretch.
No. Not as big as payday, but it's some I think he's going to be known for over time. He does a fantastic job of creating the reality of Jim Brockmire. And when I say that is, he does it in the real world. Like you said, at these games, he appears and stuff. But in social media, all over Twitter, all over the place, he's got a lot of Brockmire stuff. And, and his wife is involved, too. Katie Wright. She right there with them. She, all her tweets and stuff talk a lot about the hijinks going on with the episode, you know, tantalizing people, getting to watch it. I think it's a big win for IFC, too. I've always liked IFC, the independent film channel. And so these indie films and shows and stuff are really the place where you're going to see the new things that people are trying, new things. And it's like, you know, being there when Ernie Kovacs or Sid Caesar got their break. So I'm loving this. I'm liking Brockmire Light. I like this about baseball. And Hank Azaria is just like, if you go to the Wikipedia or go to IMDb, be ready for a lot of reading. This guy is one of the most working actors probably in the world.
Working guy.
Yeah. Now, he's got a decent net worth, too, John. Do you know the number on that by chance?
Well, yeah, I do. I know. I happen to know that. That's a good question. He's worth about, a couple years ago, they estimated he's worth about $70 million.
Wow. And that's just, you know, the thing is, if you look at this, there's not anything, any big thing that knocks you over. You know, it's just a lot of voiceovers, like on The Simpsons. He does voices for several characters on The Simpsons, you know, and he just is still doing them, you know.
He still does.
Since 1989, he's been doing them.
And the fact is that there's a history of labor negotiation, which Jim has benefited from. It deals with the Simpsons. So part of it is the fact that they've been able to work these people that do the voiceovers for the show got together and pretty well negotiated some pretty nice contracts. Jim gets about $300,000 per episode for the Simpsons.
Wow. Well, and he does some great voices. The cool thing, too, that you'd enjoy if you've never looked at his or never really paid that much attention to voices, you'd be astounded how many voices he does. But the really cool thing is what he bases the voices on. Yeah. There's the character Mo in Simpsons is based on Al Pacino, which I thought was really cool. And then he does another one. He plays a Pakistani fellow, Apu, and he uses Peter Sellers stuff. And I'm a huge Peter Sellers fan, so you gotta love that. And he just keeps going after it. And boy, this guy has got a ton of work. Now he's been on some TV stuff. If you read this stuff, he's had a lot of turndowns too. You know, he wanted to be on Friends. He wanted to play Joey. He wanted to play the Joey character, and they turned him down. But he eventually got some guest spots on it. And then also he got some spots on Mad About You. And I don't know which came first, his marriage and romance to Helen Hunt or that show. But in any case, he was married to her for a couple of years. And that didn't last, but it sounds like this, his woman that he has now, who he did marry after they had a kid, Hal, is their little boy, and you can see she's kind of shy about getting her picture taken, so you can't find a whole lot of pictures of Katie Wright, but there's a few, and I saw a couple pictures of his boy, and boy, does he look like him. Except his hair is not dark. That's about the only difference, so it was really good. It's fun to read this guy's work. I mean, there's so much of it. But again, nothing really bowls you over. There's just lots and lots of work. The guy has been super busy.
He's a grinder. There's no doubt in terms of the amount of work he's had. I think with respect to his character, the voices that he uses, Jerry, you're absolutely right. What he does is he thinks in terms of something like it, whether it be a personality or something personal. He might even do something based upon one of his relatives or some good friend.
Oh, yeah.
And then what he does...
Yeah. Like in The Birdcage, he played his grandmother, her voice. He was a male, flamboyantly gay guy who was a maid. And the interesting thing about it is that, you know, we saw this years ago, and it was he did an Hispanic accent. And I thought, oh, wow, I wonder, you know, about that. Where'd he get it and all that stuff? So I did a little research, and he's basing it on his grandmother. And, of course, his grandmother was from Greece. And I'm going, well, wait a minute. How did he get a Spanish accent from his grandmother? Then I looked into it. She was Jewish, but she was Sephardic, which means they probably spoke Spanish. Or maybe, you know, came from Spain or Mexico or something like that originally before they got to Greece. So that was her accent when she spoke English. And even, I guess, to an extent, some of the mannerisms. But, you know, the guy's just... And, you know, I think his challenge, John... I think his challenge is that I've read that he can do anyone. If he met you, within a few minutes, he'd be able to do you. He's that good. Mm-hmm. So his challenge is focus. So what he has to do is he has to be able to create a device in his mind so he can keep track of these characters. And so what he does, what he did, he'll do a well-known person in place of that character, like Peter Sellers or, like he said, Al Pacino. So it's really interesting, and I this gave me a big appreciation of the value of voiceovers and all that voice work and stuff like that. And like you said, this has turned into something good monetarily, because I think in the past maybe it wasn't that good when you think of all the cartoon voices, you know, Mel Blanc and all those guys. I just wonder, you know, did they make any money? You know, they have a long-term thing?
I would say that if you take a look at the voices, you're right. What he does, you know, trying to do it in terms of thinking in terms of a specific person, whether it be famous or not. And so I was listening to being interviewed during the baseball games, and one of the announcers says, how can you keep track of all this? How can you keep track of it? And you know what?
Yeah.
His response is, it's as natural to him as breathing. I mean, that's how much he really, this innate ability, in addition to obviously honing his skill, it's within him very deeply.
Yeah.
So he's won in a lot of awards, Emmys for his work with The Simpsons, but he's not that one dimensional just being voiceovers.
Oh no! He's in Pretty Woman, for instance. I never knew that he was the detective in Pretty Woman. You've seen him in stuff, probably. For listeners,
well,
you've probably seen him and not known you've seen him.
He was in he won an Emmy for Best Supporting Actor in a TV movie called Tuesdays with Maury.
Yep.
Which starred Jack Lemmon, was actually one of Jack Lemmon's last roles. It's a story about a professor of a sports writer who ends up having Lou Gehrig's disease, and it's like the character that Hank plays is a sports writer who's having trouble dealing with the crossroads of you know, getting older and his all these different problems, whether they be occupational or personal. And he learns so much by going every week to visit his old professor. And to me, I'll remember that movie. It was incredibly good.
Oh, it's very emotional.
Very emotional. And the fact is that it demonstrated that Hank is more than just comedy. He's more than just voiceovers. He's a very good dramatic actor.
Yeah, he's excellent.
So I thought that, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
and you'd be surprised the things that he's been in. You know, Gross Point Blank. You know, I'd forgotten or didn't know he was in that.
Yeah.
He sure is. You know,
I'll
Great Expectations.
What, yeah. Yes.
So, Godzilla? Well, okay.
you can't hit a home run every time you come up to bat. Okay.
He comes up to bat a lot, though.
He sure does. That means he's going to is let's just say his batting average is real good. And leave
yes.
it at that.
Yeah.
I think one thing that's really kind of helped him get a lot of jobs in that, he has a good network of friends that starts
yes.
even back to when he went to school. He went to Tufts University, which is one of my favorite schools just because of the mascot name. Their name, they're the Jumbos, because they were funded mostly by the circus of one of the, I don't think it was Barnum, yeah.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So they're called the Jumbos, and I just kind of always, well, the bottom line is that Hank got his start doing a lot of college theater, and there he established a relationship with, you know, a good working relationship of Oliver Pratt, and you just, from there on, man, you just hear about all the guys that he's kept close touch with, that he works well with, and I
yep.
think in the profession, that goes a long way
that's
to
huge.
Getting you the work.
Oh, yeah, because so, you know, a guy gets a part like Oliver Platt, I'm sure, and he hears them talking about casting and whatever, and he said, you know, what about Hank Azaria? And they go, God, I didn't think of him. Perfect. You know, he's in
yeah.
video games, too. He's in, like, almost 20 video games. Can you believe it? And of course, he does documentaries. Yeah.
So, one amazing guy. I'm going to, you know, now that you've mentioned and read a little bit more about him, I'm looking forward to revisiting some of these movies and seeing
yeah.
exactly what he did in them.
Yeah.
So that'll be real good, no doubt.
Yeah, well, he's got Emmys and all kinds of good stuff, a lot of nominations. He
yeah.
doesn't always get them. That's the thing. He's not a high-visibility kind of guy. He's just, you know, he wants the work. He's not worried about the glory. So it's kind of a neat guy. One of our heroes, I guess you'd say.
I have total respect for this guy. This is the kind of thing that you feel good when you're watching, because particularly this Brockmire thing, because you know it's independent. This is
yes.
not done. You're not doing this for your paycheck. You're doing this
no.
because you he's got this he has this character he wants to, you know, to play in whether it be a movie or be a TV series, and it's
yeah.
come off very, very well.
Yeah, that's the sense you get from this whole episode. We're doing all the research on this last week. The impression I have of Hank Azaria is that if IFC didn't pick up Brockmire, he'd find a way to keep doing the character.
Yeah.
Somewhere, somehow. Because he's
yep.
into it. He's
yeah.
following his passion. Okay.
Very good. So that was a little off the beaten track sports-wise, but well worth it.
Oh, yeah. It's good to mix it up a little bit. So, yeah, I guess the next big thing coming along here. Now, we're going to talk about fake news. Now, here's the cool thing about this week's fake news. And this is just to get you guys in the right frame of mind, and John and I get ourselves in the right frame of mind. I suppose everyone would think, okay, you know, maybe John and Jerry are going to talk about all the nonsense with Comey being fired.
Yeah.
And, you know, and all that stuff. But, you know, John and I more or less had the same response to this thing. It was just kind of like, boy, this is sickening. Isn't there something better on to watch? You know, Leave It
yeah.
to Beaver sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anything but
yeah.
this. But Still, I think between the two of us, we came up with a real big item that no one else has gotten. So I hate to say it this way, John, but this looks like ours. I don't think anyone else has hit this quite as hard as we've hit it. And it's your baby a little bit here, John. Say what it is.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that I read an article about in the USA Today that really surprised me. And that is that the day that Trump took his oath of office basically was the day that he filed for his reelection, for his campaign, to basically be at a point where he could start raising funds for it.
Okay. Fact number one. Yes.
Yeah. So that's sort of like the thing that kind of piqued my interest.
Yeah.
The other thing was that I thought naively, as he became, when he became president, that when he was going on this, going to the, making all these appearances with respect to all his constituents, that he was doing it sort of like, as a, what they called a thank you tour. Well, even
right.
The doggone news announcers were misleading us by thinking he's thanking his camp, his people, while he's cultivating his next election in 2020.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And
that's it.
That is it in a nutshell. But what's so funny about it is it makes so much sense, because Trump feels more comfortable campaigning than he does being a president. I mean, that's where his skills lie.
Oh, yeah.
So when you take a look at it, it makes so much sense. But so what we need to remember here is the fact that as much as people are talking about impeachment or screwing up this and that, bottom line is that reality says here that this guy is making a strong pitch to get reelected, and the fact is that it is not a ridiculous idea.
No,
because
it's not.
Historically speaking, incumbents do get reelected most of the time.
Yes.
In addition to the fact that he's more interested in his scorecard as to how he's doing with campaign pledges. So
yes.
He that also caters to it. The other thing is that these appearances are basically increasing the database of his followers, money, everything. And the followers are people that are looking for somebody to shake it up, and that's one thing he has done.
Oh, yes.
So.
Yes. Excellent. So, yeah, I would just add to people are all scratching their heads and other parts of their anatomy, I'm speaking mostly of the talking heads on TV. They're trying to figure out Donald Trump. And it's that stupid format that we're all sick to death of. The main guy says something, and then he goes around the table and asks people what they think. And it is so disgusting. I don't think any of them have a clue. Here is the clue. John just said it. You know, he's already running for re-election. And that's all he really cares about. People are puzzled by the fact that, hey, you know, he's just invited Duterte, the killer from dictator from the Philippines. To the White House. You know, and he's done this, and he's done that, and he contradicted this, and he fired Comey, and a week before he talked about how great he was, and blah 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 blah. Blah. You know, that's not Donald Trump. Donald Trump is this guy John's been talking about and I've been talking about. He's the guy who's already running again. And that's not a thank you tour. Those things that's his bread and butter. That's what he lives and dies for. That's his passion. And that's what he's focused on. And that's what he wants to do. He doesn't even care what these bills are. He doesn't read them, doesn't know what's in them. That's Paul Ryan's problem, Mitch McConnell's problem. That's not my problem. You guys need any help, just give me a call. It's an interesting, fascinating style. Whether you agree with the guy or not, you have to really admire what he's doing, because it's never been done like that before, ever, that I know of.
Well, here are a couple of things that come to mind. Number one is Donald Trump has already demonstrated the fact that approval rating doesn't mean anything. As mind-boggling as it sounds, is people can be up in arms about him. But did his low approval rating hurt him when it comes to becoming the president? No.
No.
The other thing that's kind of interesting about campaigning is that there are two things that were pointed out in this article I thought were kind of funny. One is that when you campaign, you can basically say what you want. And we know that campaigning quite often delves into what I would call kindly embellishment. In other words, saying things that might not be hitting close to the truth. And there's one area that Donald Trump is really good at. He could take something, spin it, and you look at it, and he's so boisterous about it that you don't even question it. It's like I heard just yesterday somebody say, he said, well, you know, it's tougher for a Republican to win the Electoral College than it is for a Democrat. And I thought, I don't know where that came from, but I'm sure
it's a convenient truth. That's all it is, yeah. Which means it's a lie. You know, what did we say earlier this week? Those rallies, they should be called, "It's My Party and I'll Lie If I Want To."
Yeah, it's my party. Yeah, right. Leslie Gore. Good.
But yeah.
The second thing about these campaigns is that, you know, if somebody is protesting, you can kick them out. And boy, Donald Trump has done that a couple of times. You have total control of your audience.
Yep. And, you can say whatever you want. No fact checkers.
Hey. Yeah, and beautiful. The thing is that if there's one thing that Donald Trump has got experience in, that is firing, telling people to leave, and he feels very comfortable with that. So the thing is that right now, when it comes to what he's doing as president, it's like he's got a punch list. It's sort of like you were, and he's got a list of stuff, and it's called campaign promises primarily. And what he's doing is he's just checking things off as he basically feels that he's fulfilled the promise.
Only he can feel it.
Yes.
But everyone is totally going insane over everything else, and no one talks about what he's actually doing. That is, he's running. And he's building up his base. Yeah. I'm impressed by the fact that he can ignore. So I remember this thing. Everyone's after him. Don't tweet. Just don't tweet. If you didn't tweet, everything would be fine. Someone even said that to his face a reporter in the Oval Office, and he said, "I wouldn't be sitting here if I didn't tweet." So, and he's right. He's absolutely right. Well,
but you know, the way that he's able to take in with news items, so I got kind of hung up on this Duarte Philippine dictator.
Oh, God.
And the thing was that I went back and took a look. I was kind of eagerly awaiting the meeting, but here's what Donald Trump did do. This all came about. The background is he called up the dictator because he felt that the Philippines, he wanted his input in terms of the North Korea situation.
Right.
That's what he called him up originally for. But then what comes out of it is the fact that he has all this admiration for the way that the Duarte has actually addressed the issue of the drug problem in his country. And his basic approach, that the dictator's approach, is take no prisoners. And his checklist includes, you know, killing 100,000 criminals. And that's
talk about a punch list.
Yeah. and if there's some collateral damage that includes a few of his political enemies, that's what happens.
Well.
That's just part of it. Every day we're confronted with stuff like this. And I mean, sure. I mean, the emotion of us says, well, he fired Comey. That was really bad. Comey.
A little Freudian slip.
Yeah.
Our bomb shelter training is coming out.
Oh, God, yes. But the point being that it's just another thing, and because people look at it and the outlandish reasons. I mean, I got frustrated the other day when I was talking to you about the fact that how stupid. But of course, it's just the craziness, because what's happening here is there's one thing that Donald Trump likes. He likes to make people feel uncomfortable.
Yes.
That he feels that if you're uncomfortable, he has an edge. He's using his whole thing. And I mean, some of the I remember some. It's interesting, the examples I remember, and I never watched his show, but I heard about some of the things he would pull.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of a fastidious guy who likes to have everything arranged the right way. So he kind of makes a big deal about what's the water's got to be in the right place and the napkin, and he's got to have lot of room. So if somebody's too close to him, he kind of moves away from them. He's kind of setting the stage for you don't know what the heck is going to happen. And I heard this one that I couldn't believe. He wanted to get an edge against a guy. So before he starts negotiating with him, he says, "By the way, you got really bad breath."
Perfect. That's perfect.
That's an example of what he would do. Only he's taking this on a national platform and doing things comparable to that. That's obviously way personal, but he's doing things like that. And that's the way that he keeps us uncomfortable, bouncing around while he does his whatever he wants, you know, does his thing.
Yep.
So I think it's an amazing style that he has, and it just has to play out. So as much as you get frustrated about, you know, what's going on with him, you know, you got to think about there's a method to his madness.
Method. And there's a lot of good side effects to his presidency even so far, aside from, you know, the comedy industry has just they're going to town. They're having a ball. I think Jimmy Fallon, not Jimmy Fallon, Colbert. Colbert was kind of like sinking a little bit. He wasn't quite doing his job as Letterman's replacement. He just couldn't get the hang of it. And then he just started doing, and then Donald Trump came along and saved his ass, essentially. And now he's what? He's on top now, I guess. You know, I don't keep track of that stuff, but it's something like that.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, there's a lot of people that, you know, that's the notoriety that the atmosphere that he's interested in creating. And it's in every day we're going, you know, every other day we're going to be caught up in some other thing. I don't know how these things are going to unfold. Who knows? I mean, the Russian thing seems to pop up. You know, as part of this exercise, and then and then you hear him rationalize. I heard an interview he did where he's basically rationalizing the firing, and it doesn't make any sense, the stuff he's talking about. I'm not talking about the fact that he says, "Well, I did it because of what he did with Hillary," and I thought, "Oh, that you know." But and then he's, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I don't know what to say about it. I mean,
it's not important. I mean, what's important is his next rally, and you know he's got metrics. They aren't our metrics, and he doesn't care that they're not our metrics. Every once in a while, he gets irritated with people. He loses his patience, you know, when they keep asking this stuff over and over, and they don't get it, and he doesn't get that they don't get it. So I guess that's a little frustrating for everybody. But and you know, a lot of people are worried. You know, he's going to take away everyone's health care and retirement and this, that, and the other thing. Yeah, it's unnerving, admittedly, but this one little insight we had this week, for me anyway, gave me a great deal more comfort with his presidency in general and, you know, what's going on. So anyways, I feel like we wrapped that up, John, but this brings us to a couple serious questions here I got to ask you, if you got you got a moment.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, I got thinking about it, and, you know, here you're 70, I'm 68, and, you know, retirement age kind of stuff. And I'm thinking, hey, what would be a great second career? Well, you know, remember I sent you these tapes of the Lucas Brothers, those twins?
Yeah.
Yeah. Those guys are really great. No, you haven't seen the Lucas Brothers. Go on YouTube, Lucas Brothers. They're hilarious. Anyway, that stimulated an idea. I thought, well, brothers, right? We do this podcast. You know, John, we could be baseball announcers. But we do it as brothers.
Yeah, as brothers. Oh, God.
Okay.
You would be the intern.
No, yeah, I would be like the intern. Exactly. Hank Azaria's show. Yes.
Oh, jeez. It would be like, this would be...
Wait. I could do better than that. Come on.
Yeah, I did. That was a slam, I know. That was uncalled for. That was a little...
Although the kid is good on a computer. That part,
yeah.
Anyway, I got another one, though. I got a second one. Okay. So, you know, we could run for president. That seems to work pretty well. As brothers, that would be the key thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, we could
Our come on would be great. Hey, look, we're old, you know. But amazingly, the things I can't remember, Jerry remembers. And the thing that, you know, and I have a terrible time pronouncing French things. Jerry's pretty good at that. But, you know, yeah. I'm really good with facts and remembering all these details and statistics, and I'm an accountant and all that stuff. And Jerry can't do that stuff to save his life, you know. So we're perfect, you know. I like to read legislative agendas, you know. Jerry likes to tweet.
How many cups of coffee did you have this morning?
Jeez. That's the sad part. Only one.
Oh, God.
That's the really sad part.
I think we've established your limit. It's like a half a cup.
No. Okay. Well, I'm just, you know, I do think in terms of T-shirts. So, anyways, thought I'd bring that up.
Oh, yeah.
And y'all out there who are listening, put something on social media. You know, encourage John to make the move. Announcers or presidents?
Yeah, I mean, I've had aspirations to, you know, here, first thing, in terms of baseball, my dream job was going to be, as I was going through and I was working at Price Waterhouse, was to become the controller of a Major League Baseball club.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's actually to get on the financial side of it, at least to get my foot in the door.
How'd that work?
And so here's what happened. What happened is I called up, sent my resume to the White Sox when the opening took place. Didn't even get an interview. I think it was a little bit overqualified. I was kind of they were looking for somebody more at a kind of 2 to 3 year experience, public experience to come in. And the other
thing
is
they wanted a deal.
Eventually, they also did hire somebody who played baseball through high school, and so I think they were trying to look for that mix. But here's what I came up with it, because I go to spring training every year, and I realized that it would basically take my passion, and it would really
grind it into the dirt.
Take it away. It would it would basically diminish my passion, because I couldn't go to spring training. I'd be up north, you know, getting ready for the regular season. So I respected the fact that everybody needs a passion. My passion is baseball. And getting involved in that was an experience, and maybe this is rationalization, but I just couldn't see me doing that. Now, announcing is fun, but would be interesting. Doing color, I've had people tell me as I give my insights into what's going on with respect to the Cubs or the Cardinals or whatever, they say, "Oh, you ought to be on radio doing that."
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess, but.
Are in a sense. You're on the Bro Show.
The Bro Show. Hey, this is.
Yeah.
Hey,
we already got it. What am I doing here? We already got it. We already got this.
We're there.
Yeah. Exactly. But it would be fun. So, it would be fun sometimes to just for the hell of it, for us, just for the hell of it, nobody else, to do a game. That would be fun. To broadcast, put on Ringer or whatever to get it recorded. That'd be super funny. I'd get a big kick out of that. I would enjoy doing that.
Well, to give you an example, this weekend is Mother's Day weekend, and I'm going to be down in St. Louis with our mother, for Mother's Day. But coincidentally, the Cubs are playing the Cardinals this weekend. So my first priority, of course, is my mother, but I will be at the ballpark this evening.
Really, John?
Yeah. So, you know what?
Who believes that, by the way? Anyone out there? Okay, go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
First thing is that you're right. Quite often, what plays out doesn't leave that impression. For example, I will be at the ballpark in St. Louis probably before I see my mother. Now, that would leave you with the impression that my priorities lie with baseball.
Well, why is that? Why is that not true?
You know what? I gotta work on this a little bit. It's just not. It isn't flying. I'm sorry.
You don't have much time. You're driving down there in a few minutes. So, come on, get it together. Snap out of it. All right.
Yeah. So the weather's
this
really
was a good
nice.
One.
Yeah, we had some fun with it. That's what it's all about. I mean, you've got to, there's a serious part to what we talk about.
Yes.
But there's also the fact that if you're not enjoying it, why do it?
Exactly. So. All right, buddy. Hey.
Well, listen, I got to get on the road. Come on.
All right.
I got to head down I-55.
Excuse. I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud?
Well, I will be calling Mom. Somewhere along the way. So let her know I'm going. Okay?
Good. All right. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
I'll be talking to you. Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.